Blog Talk Radio.
There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, "We got a good house here." The house Negro said, "Yeah, we got a good house here." Whenever the master said "we," he said "we." That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick." He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, "Let's run away, let's escape, let's separate," the house Negro would look at you and say, "Man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this?" That was that house Negro. In those days he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, "I'm the only Negro out here." "I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro." And if someone come to you right now and say, "Let's separate," you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. "What you mean separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa." "That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa." On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them Shetlands nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated his master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died.
If someone come to the field, Negro, and said, let's separate, let's run. He didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here.
You got field Negroes in America. I'm a field Negro. The masters are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind.
Just as the slave master in that day, you come, the house Negro, to keep the field Negro in check. The same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Tom's, 20th century Uncle Tom's, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts to. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts their hand on you, send them to the cemetery. A good religion. In fact, that's that old time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one, resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf, and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teach us don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen.
Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here at Blog Talk Radio. Today I want to talk about the term nationhood, nation building, whatever. Just who has a real solid plan? Because you hear a lot of people out here talk about nationhood, nation building, but I don't really see no solid plan. It's enough of that talking shit. Too much of that talking has gotten on my damn nerves. Show me something. Show me a solid plan. It's too many people I see that here running around talking about it, going ahead and collecting money, putting cash in their pockets. Ain't really doing a whole lot. Today I want to talk to a couple of brothers about it and get their thoughts and views. It's just merely a conversation. See how we can go with it from there. Brother Kavina, man, you there?
Yeah, I'm there. What's up, Chef Rob? How you doing, man?
How you doing, brother? How you been?
I've been pretty good.
Yeah, you used to do shows on Saturday, man. I kind of missed the stuff that you put out. It was good stuff, but, you know, I know everybody got stuff going on in their lives.
Yeah, it was a good show, man. A lot of good conversation we used to have.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can go ahead and bring that back, because I ain't used to doing these things on Saturdays. I ain't used to doing it in the daytime. Used to doing mines at night. But how do you feel about that, man? Nationhood, who has a solid plan?
You know what I mean? I listen to a lot of different people, and I can't identify anyone with a solid plan of really what it would take to start going in that direction. You know, various people put it out there. I don't know. You know, I don't want to name any names, but, you know, various people put it out there. And it usually comes with some catch that will exclude other people who might be into it. Because, you know, the thing that International Boobie and myself we had got together with the mindset of whatever differences we have, if we're a Christian, if we're Muslim, if we're Moor, if we're Democrat, if we're Republican, if we're light-skinned, dark-skinned, whatever it was, put that to the side, focus on the issue, clock in, go to work, focus on self-determination, self-survival for Black people. And then the differences, we can that's another day after the work is done. And, you know, a lot of people, their nation building starts with, you know, first they have to convert everyone else to their leader. And then we can go ahead and nation build. And I just feel like that is a step that is an unnecessary step and a roadblock to actually nation building.
You know, what is nationhood for you? Your definition. I know what else. What would you feel would be a nationhood, nation building? We can get to the purpose later. But what would you think that is?
I would think that nation building within the borders of the United States is not going to be achievable unless you have an answer to the SEAL Team 6 the U.S. military and Tomahawk missiles. If you don't have an answer to that, you're not going to build a solid nation with borders within the United States. So you either have to determine you're going to go for a sub-nation within a nation, or you're going to have to go outside the borders. And I would leave that to people to decide which way they want to go. My definition of nationhood would be at least getting off the dependency of white people. Because I put it, like I said in my show, you know, before, we depend on a white man for everything. We depend on a white man for water. We depend on a white man for electricity. When we flush the toilet, we depend on a white man to do something with our disposable waste, with our garbage. We depend on a white man, you know, for food, for jobs, for everything. We're infantile, like we're depending on parents to supply everything. So there's no way we can be a man and have such dependent upon someone who has shown time and time again they're just out to destroy you. I mean, we see the thing in the news every single day. These white men are out to destroy you, yet we're dependent on them, and we seem to be satisfied with that. With a few complaints here and there, but other than that, we seem to just be complacent with our situation. So, you know, my idea of nationhood was to slowly wean ourselves off dependent on the white man. If it has to be starting with putting a solar panel on your house and getting your own electricity, start there. If it has to be digging a well in your backyard to get your own water, start there. If it has to be having a few chickens in your backyard for eggs and food, start there. Do something to wean yourself off dependence on the white man. And that's not going to be done. You're not going to have a plan on Monday and be done on Friday. It's going to take you your generation. And it's something that our generation, we're probably two generations behind at least, of being able to depend on our weaning ourselves off the dependence of the white man. And so that's what nationhood should be the goal, at least as individuals, as Chef Rob is an individual, Kavita Man is an individual, us individuals, and then as us as a group, weaning ourselves off of the dependence of the white man. That's just basic starts. It starts there.
Thanks. Hey, Brother AC, your line open.
Brother's here, man.
How you doing?
To the brother. Oh, man, much better state, man. Much better state with all of the turmoil and chaos going around. You know, I'm feeling rather peaceful right about now. You know, listening to what the brother said, I just love the term white man. I mean, you know, it seems to me that our people, out of their kindness, out of their very nature, have tried in recent history here, and I'm talking about the past 20, maybe 30 years, have tried to eliminate the concept, the term of the white man, i.e. his control of the situation that we find ourselves in. And it makes me think about the line from Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects, the best trick that the devil ever accomplished was to make people think that he didn't exist. So I think for a long period here, probably too long, this concept has been brought against our people, where they actually think that what the problems that exist in this world aren't being caused by the quote unquote white man. So it was good to hear the brother use that term.
You know,
also.
Go ahead.
Also relating to the concept of nation building that you opened the program with. I agree with the brother. If we take the limited scope of suggesting that this is something that has to happen within the United States, we're delving into an impossible task. It would have to be a global movement. When we speak about nation, we would have to include every country as they're known now on the planet, you know, and resolve the issues that the brother was speaking of. I mean, there's only one way to approach that situation, and that is the concept of everyone being equal, for lack of a better term, in the sight of God. You know, everyone having a worth in this global situation, everyone being just as important as the next person, which is what the white man has basically eliminated. I mean, their importance is based on their control of everything, but the fact remains their control of everything is enabled by the fact that everyone is involved in that system that they have. I mean, you know, yeah, they sell us electricity, but they're not the ones running the plants or, you know, the running the machinations to create the electricity. They sell us the water, but they're not the ones out there actually checking it to make sure it's pure. And, of course, in some instances, they really don't care if it's pure just as long as it sells. But, you know, people are the one who basically are running these entities. And since they are running them, they do have, you know, some source of control. So, you know, it's all about the people. But like I said, you have to bring the people to a point where they realize that, you know, what it is that they do is just as important as what the businessmen on Wall Street, the people in government do. And the only thing that is separating us from that now, from that position, is the fact that these people are paid more. So, you know, it seems to me logical that if you eliminate the concept of pay and everyone, you know, does this for their survival, then we all come out on top.
You know what? Real quick, something else he said. Brother Kavita Man said when he's talking about the having a way to deal with SEAL Team 6. But you know, even if you, in order to get to that stage where you got your own group to go ahead and go up against SEAL Team 6, you got to go ahead and train them. So again, it still comes back to that idea of having resources and ways to fund them. And right now, I would like to go ahead and deal with a little bit of that. You know, what? How could you even fund part of that? You know what I'm saying?
What?
Because we don't have a system in place to go ahead and to do any funding. And that's my thing, because I see individuals talking about nationhood, nation building. So how do you fund the whole thing? Nothing's going to go ahead and come up unless it takes money. You can't throw it out there.
Wait a minute. You're talking about funding an entity to confront the military.
You got to go ahead and start from the bottom up. I mean, like, we put the message out there,
exactly.
You plant the seed, you put it in everybody's head. Okay, well, that's fine. I agree with that. But where do you go from there, you know, to go ahead and to train that army, to even think about buying bullets, to go ahead even go try and make them, to go ahead and get your own housing, you know, it's dealing with housing and food and logistics, and there's a lot of other things come up with that. So I think that you got to figure out a way to fund the whole thing. That's what I see. There's nothing. You got to figure out a way to go ahead and get some resources on your side, and that's what I don't see. I see people who want to talk about nationhood, nation building, but you got to also think about it. It's got to be funded. The U.S. right now, they got ways to fund their armies. We don't have a way to go ahead.
And the funding. The funding needs to be self-generated. You know, if you're really talking about putting some nationhood together or true building, it can't be you're depending on donations. Are you going to shake down this person because he got an NBA contract? You're going to do that's not a source for money that's going to be sustaining. You have to have industries or some type of businesses that are financing and supporting this network, because you just can't rely on donations. Everybody, that's not a way of funding an organization.
Okay.
All right,
well,
everybody's line is open. There's quite a few people calling in. So I got Brother Fakan, are you there?
Yes, sir. What's up, you whole family?
How you doing, brother? Brother Robert X, your line is open. And Sister Ebony, your line is open too. But anybody can go ahead and chime in there. How would you go ahead? What would be the best way to go ahead and fund this? To go ahead, because all this stuff costs money. We can't throw that off.
Okay. Can I offer something quickly and let all of the other people come in? I'm going to be real brief with this.
Go ahead.
It is my contention, my perspective, that anytime you involve this new situation into a concept of funding, then you're playing in, devil's backyard. I mean, who controls the funding? If you would do, I mean, my example would be, this is what happened to the Union of Soviet Socialistic Republics. I mean, they tried to do a system where they didn't depend on money. The only problem was they needed money, and they lost the battle. See, so my suggestion is, if you're going to do funding, you're dealing in the wheelhouse of the very entity that you're trying to overcome. And now you can take it from there.
Well, we in this system, so you know, right now we got to deal with that until we can build something else. That's what I'm trying to get to, until we can go ahead and build our own.
Hotel family.
How you doing, fam?
I'm good. Robert X, listen, I came in on a tail end. I wasn't at the beginning, so at the risk of sounding, you know, repetitive, I would simply say that the use of capital can be looked at only as a tool. It can never be looked at as the end product or the end result of what we're trying to do. But when you're talking about nationhood, because his brother just stated quite clearly, all they have to do is basically decrease the value of the currency. And there goes all your plan. So in the middle of a spiritual battle, which is really, as I see it, and let's be clear, for almost 20 years, I talked about nothing but economics, coming from Garveyism and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and that kind of thing. But it became clear to me during the process of attempting to build credit unions, which, and I'm going back 20 years, more than 20 years ago, talking about building independent credit unions, which would have given us leverage to do things based on what was coming down the road. And we're at that point down the road today. It became clear to me that we're at the point of a spiritual warfare, and therefore, when we look at capital and what it represents in terms of the energy aspects of it, we've got to understand that that can't be the bottom line for why we do what we do. That there has to be, it has to be an educational component to, in fact, reconstruct the minds of the people using currency as the carrot to get people involved in whatever it is that you want to do. But eventually, money has to be phased out completely. Completely.
Yes, sir, brother.
And I agree 100% totally.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, brother.
What the two brothers have said, and that, and everybody who's on the line, is, as well as maybe your listening audience, have always heard us have those conversations. And I've always said, if the government woke up tomorrow and said, okay, American people, we're going to discontinue our currency, we'd be stuck, because most of our conversations are always geared toward we need this funding. But, of course, that funding, as the two brothers allude to, that funding is their money. That's their currency. They could do what they want to do with that. We have other ways and other options. It doesn't take funding for us to sit back and be on this line as we're conversating. I didn't have to donate. The brothers didn't have to donate, but we're sharing the ideas of nationhood. We don't have to fund for us to sit back at the table to share what Brother Robert X knows, what myself knows, what you know, Chef Rob, and the others that are on the line. There's many things that we can do that does not take funding, because as the brothers alluded to, first and foremost, you have to have the knowledge component together first. That don't take funding. That's free and absolute. That don't take funding. That gets you to the dedicated function of building a cadre first and foremost. If you don't have that cadre, if you don't have the vehicle component to move forward to produce the blueprint of what you're talking about, and then at the same time, if you're dealing with economics, if you're dealing with funding, if we are to have that conversation, then that conversation should never be limited to the dependency on the currency of the United States of America. That conversation should also allude to, how do we barter with each other? How do we communicate with each other, not just nationally, but on an international level, with brothers we know who travel back and forth, who probably have communications and connections with others outside of this country, that we can deal in gold, that we could deal in raw materials, that we could deal with, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had, people making the Fruit of Islam uniforms back there. They had Japan making Fruit of Islam clothes. They had brothers in Africa building connections to other cats. And so this idea of Brother Robert X alluded to, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, the idea that was alluded to, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they stepped out of the realm of dependency as it related to the currency of America. Yes, indeed, we are here in America. We have to go to the store and buy our milk with their currency. But the ideas that was given to us by our fathers, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and others before them, others before them, stepped outside of that realm to have us to understand that when they decide to shut down, which is why that book, Fall of America, because at some point this is going to fall. And when it falls, are we to fall with it? Are we to sit back and whatever we're talking about, that we build in a nationhood, and when they fall, our nation fall because we was totally dependent on them? No. So what we first have to do, as the two brothers alluded to, build on the knowledge capacity that we have within the realms of each other. That don't take funding. That's free and absolute. We do that all the time. We can set up a meeting. We can set up a forum. We can set up a conference. We can set up this, and funding is not involved. We have to first get to the knowledge of self, first and foremost. Right. Knowledge of self is going to bring the foundation of everything that we're talking about in nation building. Then when we deal with economics, and we have our brothers that deal with economics, it has to always be put on the table. Yes, deal with the components that we are here in this particular establishment, this particular country, but have plan B through C. So when they decide to dismiss, if they decided tomorrow, if they decided next week, we can sit back and say, oh, that's okay. because we have communications internationally dealing with bauxite, dealing with coal, dealing with gold, dealing with this, dealing with that. And we're not worried whether or not they dismiss their currency, because now Sister Smith, who's growing potatoes down the street, who's and Sister Robinson, who's growing the cabbage and everything, we begin to barter food and begin to survive on our own accord. And this is why it's called promoting self-reliance. How can you dare talk about nationhood and self-reliance and self-determination and in the same breath and token depend on your oppressor for your survival?
Let me get in on something I'd like to call the deeper still. Everything that the brothers were talking about, you must understand that at this point in time, it is not just a United States situation. It is global. Everything
exactly.
that is happening in this on this planet is running through the U.S. currency system. I mean, the United States currency is controlling everything. And what that does, it does not make the United States stronger. It makes the entire system weaker. Because if
exactly.
that system falls, it's the domino theory. If it falls in the United States right now at this point in time because of the global economy, it falls everywhere. Everywhere.
That's right.
And the thing that makes the United States the most weakest at this point in time is they won't even back their titular leader. And we know why they won't back him. But the fact is they weaken themselves because they won't back their own leader, their elected leader. And all of the crap that they talk to us has been based on the concept that the United States is a democracy, a democracy that elected a man that they won't back. It makes them weak. And one more point. If this situation was to fall tomorrow, rhetorical question, what race on this planet would be most capable of surviving that fall? The answer, the black man, because as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, when they brought us over here, they took everything. So we are used to, as a people, dealing with having nothing. And that,
right.
when everybody else has to suffer, what we've already suffered, it puts us at an advantage.
Here, I want to play something that feeds right into what everybody's saying. Hold on. And listen to this dealing with money. I think, Brother Fakan, you heard this already.
Most of us believe that banks lend out money that has been entrusted to them by depositors. Easy to picture, but not the truth. In fact, banks create the money they loan, not from the bank's own earnings, not from the money deposited, but directly from the borrower's promise to repay. The borrower's signature on the loan papers is an obligation to pay the bank the amount of the loan plus interest, or lose the house, the car, whatever asset was pledged as collateral. That's a big commitment from the borrower. What does the same signature require of the bank? The bank gets to conjure into existence the amount of the loan and just write it into the borrower's account. Sound far-fetched? Surely that can't be true. But it is. To demonstrate how this miracle of modern banking came about, consider this simple story, The Goldsmith's Tale. Once upon various times, pretty much anything was used as money. It just had to be portable, and enough people had to have faith that it could later be exchanged for things of real value, like food, clothing, and shelter. Shells, cocoa beans, pretty stones, even feathers have been used as money. Gold and silver were attractive, soft, and easy to work with, so some cultures became expert with these metals. Goldsmiths made trade much easier by casting coins, standardized units of these metals whose weight and purity was certified. Well, to protect his gold, the goldsmith needed a vault, and soon his fellow townsmen were knocking on his door, wanting to rent space to safeguard their own coins and valuables. Before long, the goldsmith was renting every shelf in the vault and earning a small income from his vault rental business. Years went by, and the goldsmith made an astute observation. Depositors rarely came in to remove their actual physical gold, and they never all came in at once. That was because the claim checks the goldsmith had written as receipts for the gold were being traded in the marketplace as if they were the gold itself. This paper money was far more convenient than heavy coins, and amounts could simply be written instead of laboriously counted one by one for each transaction. Meanwhile, the goldsmith had another business. He lent out his gold, charging interest. Well, as convenient claim check money came into acceptance, borrowers began asking for their loans in the form of these claim checks instead of the actual metal. As industry expanded, more and more people asked the goldsmith for loans. This gave the goldsmith an even better idea. He knew that very few of his depositors ever removed their actual gold, so the goldsmith figured he could easily get away with lending out claim checks against his depositors' gold in addition to his own. As long as the loans were repaid, his depositors would be none the wiser and no worse off, and the goldsmith, now more banker than artisan, would make a far greater profit than he could by lending only his own gold. For years, the goldsmith secretly enjoyed a good income from the interest earned on everybody else's deposits. Now a prominent lender, he grew steadily richer than his fellow townsmen, and he flaunted it. Suspicions grew that he was spending his depositors' money. His depositors got together and threatened withdrawal of their gold if the goldsmith didn't come clean about his newfound wealth. Contrary to what one might expect, this did not turn out to be a disaster for the goldsmith. Despite the duplicity inherent in his scheme, his idea did work. The depositors had not lost anything. Their gold was all safe in the goldsmith's vault. Well, rather than taking back their gold, the depositors demanded that the goldsmith, now their banker, cut them in by paying them a share of the interest. And that was the beginning of banking. The banker paid a low interest rate on deposits of other people's money that he then loaned out at a higher interest. The difference covered the bank's cost of operation and its profit. The logic of this system was simple, and it seemed like a reasonable way to satisfy the demand for credit. However, this is not the way banking works today. Our goldsmith banker was not content with the income remaining after sharing the interest earnings with his depositors, and the demand for credit was growing fast as Europeans spread out across the world. But his loans were limited by the amount of gold his depositors had in his vault. That's when he got an even bolder idea. Since no one but himself knew what was actually in his vault, he could lend out claim checks on gold that wasn't even there. As long as all the claim check holders didn't come to the vault at the same time and demand real gold, how would anyone find out? This new scheme worked very well, and the banker became enormously wealthy on the interest paid on gold that did not exist. The idea that the banker would just create money out of nothing was too outrageous to believe, so for a long time the thought did not occur to people. But the power to just invent money went to the banker's head, as you can well imagine. In time, the magnitude of the banker's loans and his ostentatious wealth did trigger suspicions once again. Some borrowers started to demand real gold instead of paper representations. Rumors spread. Suddenly, several wealthy depositors showed up to remove their gold. The game was up. A sea of claim check holders flooded the street outside the closed doors of the bank. Alas, the banker did not have enough gold and silver to redeem all the paper he had put into their hands. This is called a run on the bank, and it is what every banker dreads. This phenomenon of a run on the bank ruined individual banks and, not surprisingly, damaged public confidence in all bankers. It would have been straightforward to outlaw the practice of creating money from nothing.
All right, welcome back to the show. Y'all get that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, Brother AC, you go ahead. You spin on that real fast.
My question to the brother. I think everybody on this line, beloved brother, last brother that spoke, understands the capacity of the American dollar, which itself is decreased. And yes, on a global scale, none of us are ignorant to the fact on a global scale of what the American dollar has done globally, and also now the increase in China, the increase in Japan, in their methods, which is why they are in Africa themselves redeeming their people through their particular currency. And as we all know, prior to our brother Muammar Gaddafi being assassinated, what the plan was with him on a global scale as it related to the African continent's coming together to create their own currency, which would have been a threat to American globalism. That's a fact. Anybody could do the research on that, which is part of the reason why this particular brother was assassinated. In his concepts and in his ideas of what this brother was alluding to create throughout the African continent and throughout global alliance as it related to building that particular foundation on global currency to oust United States imperialism and the capitalist global society of their alliance. Now, my thing is, with all the quote-unquote power that America has, that still does not negate what we have to do as an African people to begin to control our own destinies in economics, in finance, in communications. And this is why I agree with what you said as it relates to that particular outcome of currency in America. However, we still have the power through consolidation, through unification, that if we had an economic outburst in unison, not just nationally but internationally, then whatever America quote-unquote controls is because of the lack of consolidation, the lack of unification of us as a people to stop it. Oh, and then again, out of Africa comes the resources, comes the minerals, comes the materials for which you and I are even able to talk on this line. You and I are able to walk down the street and talk on our cell phones. You and I are able to turn on TV because of such minerals, because of such TV that comes out of our lands, out of our countries. Now, if we rose up to take control of what's naturally ours, then again, that threat would be formulated to the American global economy, because they can only do as much as we have allowed them to do due to our lack of unification. And this is why we're dealing on the question of nationhood, because it takes us to not only recognize, yes, America has the power to do what they do because we give them that power. But as soon as we negate that power from them to consolidate ourselves, to create our own financial systems, our own banking institutions, our own currency, then all of that would be alleviated. And so it bothers me to sit and even talk about, yes, we recognize the power that America has, but the fact still remains. They only have power because we allow them to have power. And until we consolidate and unify ourselves and deal on those particular subject matters, yes, their powers will be in existence until then, until we create our own Department of Finance, our own institutions, and regain our own resources and natural minerals.
Well, you know, brother, I think that's what the BRICS, the BRIC countries are doing right now. And it's no accident that you mentioned Brother Gaddafi. He was a part of that structure where these BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, or I can't even name them all. I talk about economics so little these days. But suffice it to say, they're offering an alternative to the dollar being the instrument used to measure a global economic participation.
Right.
And because of that, it's caused this Zionist element, the money changers, you can call them whatever you want, the people who really control finance, it's caused them to, in fact, facilitate much of the violence globally that we see going on in terms of preventing the acquisition of resources by these countries, because they have every intention, and this is what we see going on now. You recall last night I mentioned the second reconstruction, and that's what we're in right now. In terms of a reorganization of the system globally, whereby anybody that doesn't bow down to the wishes of this Zionist element are attacked. And it's no accident as well that all the countries that are being attacked were in fact not a part, weren't controlled by the global monetary system in terms of the banking system. They didn't bow down to the central banking structure. And so we must understand, I think, that
What's happening is they're creating regional economic blocks.
Wow.
They have a system that they're putting in place that will allow for them to control every area on the planet by constructing this new global banking system where the Federal Reserve will, for the most part, become obsolete. And the real critter that runs it all is now emerging from the shadows, and, you know, some of us have been talking about this real monster for over 20 years. And that real monster that's finally starting to get some discussion is called the Bank of International Settlements. They call it the Tower of Babel. That's
brother,
the real monster.
Let me get in, brother. I'm not going to disagree with anything the other brother said. You know, it stands for itself. Brother did a good job. Let me just say that I think that when you focus more on the religious conversions or the mental conversions of people, you lose focus on what it was or what it is, some of the things that we need. If you look at, see, the Chinese people or, you know, Asians or the Arabs have certain elements in the society on lockdown. Jews have certain elements of society on financial lockdown. Asian people got certain elements in our society on lockdown. You can go to the Chinatown. You can go down and you can find the businesses where the Arab people, their people have their money on lockdown. They're not out there shooting 13 kids on a weekend. They're not doing that because they have their stuff on lockdown. They're not worried about if the economy collapses, we're going to do this. They say, well, they might audible. If the economy collapses, we're going a different direction. Until then, we're going to run this play. And this play is getting this money and keeping our kids off the street, keeping our kids from shooting each other. They got a financial plan. They focus on that. We seem to have a plan, from the conversation, that if something happens, then we'll get ready. But what about if the dollar doesn't collapse in the next 25 years? Do you have a plan to deal with that for the next 25 years? If it collapses in 25 years or if it collapses next Thursday, we can have a plan. We can run an audible. But right now we need a coach to have a game plan. So this is the game plan that we're going to run on until we need the audible. Don't audible from this play until we see something different. The Arabs are effective. The Japanese people, effective. They're on top. White folks, Jewish, they're effective because they're running their game plan. We are waiting on them to collapse before we come up with a game plan. That's not a game plan. We need to do what we
got to
do.
I don't think we're waiting on anybody to collapse before we got there, and that's why we're having this particular discussion, beloved, because we need the game. This is why, if you remember me saying earlier, beloved, I said while we're dealing with Plan A, we have to have Plan B through C being worked on as well, because the difference between the Arab, between the Pakistani, between the Korean, between the Asian, whoever's in our community, the difference between them and us in the communities is whether or not this currency falls next Thursday, as you say, or 25 years from now, as you say, or if it doesn't, as you say. The difference between those and us is the fact that if it falls, they still have their currency to work with. They still have their currency to barter with. They could trade and barter with currency. You can go to their country and have currency. You can't name a city in the United States of America. You can't go to Philly and go to the brothers in the neighborhood in Philly and say, let me see your currency, brother, that you operate with here in Philly. Or what is the national currency for black people here in America? You can't do that. And so there's a difference between the Asian in the Chicago community and the black in the Chicago community, because we don't have a currency that we could sit back and fall back on and see, man, let's have what else can we do with our currency? Our currency is their currency. And this is why when we're dealing with currency, yes, as the brother alluded to, we're here in this beast. And we're going to have to deal with this particular currency, but have Plan B through Z. I don't think anybody on this particular line, brother, is sitting back waiting till it falls, and then let's create a plan, and then let's move on. No, we're trying to create that plan now. The brother, Brother Chef Rob, if you could fill me in with the brother the name of the brother that we had a couple of days ago on the line, who is dealing with economics, and a brother who has some things set up in Africa, and he was talking about dealing in gold bullions and other things of that capacity. I forget the brother's name, but that brother, Brother Chef Rob, that brother you, we had on the line before, who said that, yes, while we're working on a blueprint here, we also have to work on how do we communicate with our international brothers. How do we deal with internationally that when it does fall, because we don't know if it falls next Thursday, we don't know if it falls 25 years from now, we don't know when it falls, but when it do fall, we should be able to switch over in a snap of a finger to sit back and say, okay, that put a little hurt on us, or that might have stung us because this currency failed, but we all right because we have our brothers in Algiers, we have our brothers in Zimbabwe, we have our brothers over here in Sierra Leone or Ghana or wherever our other brothers are, and they've been keeping up this particular establishment of our financial gain, so we're not dead to the fact of total dependency on America. So I think, brother, that this is the perfect conversation, that when we're talking about that, we have to have plan A because we're here, but we have to have plan B through C to discuss those other particular realms. We can't just lock in and concentrate on America. And as I stated yesterday, I've heard so many conversations where people sit back and say, we need to create we need to have our own black bank. Or they'll sit back and say, man, we should support the black banks that's in the community. And I've always said, you name one black-owned bank in America, you can't do it.
Yep.
You can't name one black-owned damn bank in America. Stop sitting back saying that we should support the black-owned bank. Why don't you go to Seaway and say a black-owned bank? You're damn lying. You can't name one black-owned bank because who controls the policy in that bank? Who controls and dictates how that bank is ran? Don't tell me it's a black-owned bank because the brother sitting at the head of it is supposed to be the CEO. That's like saying Obama, because he's the president of the United States, he running the damn show. It's a damn, it's a lot. So there is
not
no black-owned bank. Not
there's
one.
Not one.
We don't own the current.
There's not one school for banking in the country. Not one.
Not one.
So the question becomes, how do you become involved in banking?
Exactly.
And the answer is you have to be allowed to operate within the confines of what is definitely a closed shop.
Yes, sir.
It is a closed shop. And the other thing is that all of those people that you named, good brother, all of those people operate from a nationalist perspective. Okay? Every single one of those groups that you named who are doing fairly well off
mm-hmm.
the backs of black people,
yes,
have a system in place in terms of an alternative country they go back and forth to.
Thank you.
They don't operate in a vacuum.
That's
the other very important piece that's been missing from African people. And
yes,
if you really want to incur the wrath of white America, because the enemy today, everybody that's being attacked based on their allegiance towards nationalism.
Thank you.
Go and look at the history of this country and look at who's been attacked in this country. You come with that nationalist flag, you better be real clear to carry it all the way through, because they will come at you with everything that they got, because they're pushing internationalism as opposed to nationalism. And I'm going to tell you something else. It has no color. They will attack white nationalists, and you see it every day, just like they attack black nationalists and marginalize them using their media.
Exactly.
That's real. But it doesn't mean that we should quit speaking about it. We have to understand it. I'm not quite sure we really understand it, because part of my philosophy is nonviolent non-participation. What does that mean? Very quickly, it means stop supporting the system that doesn't support you in any area that you can. So that means everybody can be effective in this by simply, let's take NBC, the hallmark right. of the military-industrial complex. That's the war apparatus. Used to be RCA.
Yes, sir.
Let's say we want to inflict damage on them in a nonviolent, very effective way. All you have to do is turn off NBC. And you ain't got to march. You ain't got to do nothing. Just don't go there. And you can become very effective in that. The other component of this is there's going to have to be, and I know this is going to rub some people the wrong way, but I'm telling you what's going to happen based on my research. The right and the left in this country is going to coalesce because the center is totally compromised, and that's why politically you hear them always talking about moving to the center. You hear it all the time that that's where everything is done, at the center. But the center is totally compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Such that when you allow yourself to be compromised by the center, you basically lose any effectiveness to make any kind of change, and that's why it never happens. Because the center is controlled by the people in positions of power and authority. So that's what's going to happen. In that process of left and right coming together, they're going to sit down at the table and decide what it is that each side expects in terms of the outcome of left and right coming together to neutralize the power that the center basically controls. That's when everything is going to change. And I don't see any real change coming until that happens. Luckily, it's in the process. I monitor almost 20 white radio stations on the Internet consistently for years. Before that, I was monitoring most shortwave. And I'm here to tell you that the things that we're talking about right now, they're saying the same things. That's what's so interesting about this conversation we're having. Because now white people at both the left and the right are now feeling the same pain that black people have felt for a long time. And you even hear them say it. The police brutality on white people is comparable to what's happening with black people.
Hey, I got a new caller. 682-365, your line is open. Hello? One more time, 682-365. Your line is open. Put you back on mute. You know,
hi.
One thing, okay.
Oh, there she
so
is.
Brother Rob.
Go ahead, brother.
Sister Cheryl.
What was that?
Go ahead,
what's
the number? Go ahead, sister. I think I heard a sister.
Yeah, I said hello. I just said hello. I'm from the UK, so I was just listening, really. I know you opened my mic, Chef Rob, but I wasn't really contributing. I really am just learning and listening.
Oh, beautiful. That's good. I'm glad you're here. I absolutely
love that accent.
That's marvelous. She know that. It makes her melt. She know that.
I know. I get told that all the time. But, yeah, tonight I really just wanted to learn from you guys, so I'm really just listening.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Feel free to chime in anytime, sister.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, your mic's open. Hey, Brother Fukan, I want to go ahead and ask you a little bit more about the National Solidarity Committee. And creating that Department of Finance. So explain that a little bit. You know, go ahead and go into that a little bit. Where would you go ahead and deal with, what would you deal with first with that?
Well, first off, in order to even create this specific department, you will have to start first with those around who are economically equipped to deal with that question. Those of us, such as the brother that you spoke with that was online a couple of weeks ago that dealt with the question of communications and bullions and so forth, all African international connections here and there. Brothers such as Brother Robert X on the line, who deals also in economic strategy and tactics. You have to have brothers and sisters who are economically equipped to sit down and deal with not only the situations that we have here, but deal with and understand the situations from a global perspective, and how do we consolidate that and build the blueprint for our own gain and benefit. It's nothing you can do to grasp just individuals and sit back and say, hey, let's just deal with finance. How do we fund this? Because you're dealing with a global machine. And in dealing with the global machine, you have to come up with a global foundation, a global benefit, a global value and development for our people that's going to not only rock Chicago, but rock Philly, rock L.A., and move from outside of what we have here in this particular country, but on the outside as well. We have brothers, the brother that was online in the U.K., which means there's supporters in the U.K., there's supporters in Africa, there's supporters definitely in Jamaica and Brazil. However, what we are missing is the component, the piece of synonymous dialogue and manifestation from that dialogue to put together the financial expertise. There's, we have brother again, we have brothers like Brother Robert X on the phone, but what about the other Robert X's who we don't know?
And yeah, so imagine, what would be the proper dialogue? That's a good one. What would be the proper dialogue?
Exactly. And that's where you have these particular sisters and brothers build the line of communications and begin again to analyze the situation on a global scale and begin the process to put that economic piece together. From there, you build that economic cadre in which the line of communications is established, the statistics are established, the question of value is established, and all that comes from that economic development, and how do we correlate that to the idea of nationhood, but at the same time, the end result of them sitting together, how do we move the idea and components of which we came up to and survey that amongst the masses of the people and get them involved, hey, brother, in it as well. And so,
hey, brother, go ahead, bro.
And so with that, that's where we come up. That's where we come up with that particular piece. So you have to, again, gain the economic development and the know-hows from those sisters and brothers to put that piece together, to put that blueprint piece together. And it's going to take them to sit. An example, Brother Rob, next month we call in this particular conference and we say we need to stop having a four-hour conference with each other or a meeting. And if we're sincere and serious, we need to make this a weekend thing. Nobody's going home. Tell your wives that, you know, you won't be home for the weekend. We leave Friday, and nobody's coming back until Sunday night or Monday until a blueprint is established. This is the seriousness of what we need to start doing with the know-hows that we have. Those brothers who are in economics, put them together and put their sincerity at that table for that weekend and many weekends after that to start establishing that know-how. In the same way, vice versa, with agriculture, health, and so forth on. They have to do it. The economists that we have, they have to put that together.
Yeah, bro, I was going to add this, Covina, man. I was going to add, I just think that it's, I don't think it's realistic to think that the brothers who are sitting in Africa who might have some gold bullion or whatever, silver or whatever materials, all of a sudden going to say, oh, let's share that with the people over there in America and let's come up with a game plan. It's like we here in America have to come up with our economic game plan to buy into whatever kind of resources that they might have that we can utilize. I don't think that you can buy and sell on the world market with our, you know, we're the most high or we got this. We have to use actual material, actual money. So you and I would have to go out and do our labor worth here in America, whatever it is we do. We have to do that, have our economic resources. It's going to be, you know, the U.S. dollar until somebody come up with something better, but you have to go out, earn your U.S. dollar, and go out there and buy into this world market that we're proposing to trade in. Whatever economics we're going to have in America, it has to start with U.S. currency dollars. If it's something else, right? You just right now, man, you're just spinning wheels. It has to be, right now, we have to use the available currency that's on the table.
I agree with that. I think we all agree with that. Go ahead. Somebody else wanted to say something.
Hold on. Let me bring in another caller. 773-253. Your line is open. You have a question?
Hotep, brother.
Hotep, how you feeling?
Hotep, brother. Okay, it's Brother Calvin. How you doing, Brother Robert?
All right.
Hotep, brother. Yeah.
Hotep. Hey, I'm going to an event tonight because a friend asked me. And they part of this this thing called Black Wall Street. And some brothers coming together trying to get into the system. And I'm noticing, because I do a little research on what's going on in Chicago. And one of the things I talk about is the coastline. They're changing the coastline on Lake Michigan from McCormick Place all the way to Gary, and they're going to spend like $17 billion. And none of us are included in this in this plan, as they're planning to make these changes and all this, and even with the Port of Chicago, which they're giving away. And it seems that, you know, and I'm going to try to be nice to people at this event, it seems that we're still begging at the table just to even come in and call ourselves a minority, looking for the minority set aside when we even go in the room, even though knowing that our tax dollars in our communities, we're double taxed. You know, look at your receipt at Walgreens. It's insane. So what do you guys think about, these other people? Some of these guys are coming, and women, they're coming from these colleges who've been calling themselves Greeks, getting in there, getting the resources to that, you know, some resources that the crumbs of the table that the white man is giving them and not giving back, you know, because if anything comes down, I think we got an opposition to deal with within our community, you know, that's looking to just bamboozle us, you know, and get up ahead and just squander the money, you know, put it back.
Here's how I used to look at it, Brother Cal, and I don't think that many of these people have a full understanding. You can't divorce the economic moves that are being made from the political moves that are being made. They are one and the same. They are like brother and sister. And I think that in many cases, many of these people only see the economic opportunities. It's as if, and I've used this analogy before, if slavery came back into vogue today, many of these same Negroes would be fighting each other for the rope concession in terms of hanging black people. They consider that an economic opportunity to sell the people the rope to hang us with. That's how we have to look at these people. They're very myopic in terms of how they see the world and how they view themselves. They create things like brands, and they buy into this philosophy of a brand. And so I asked one of the people who's involved in this insanity, because that's what it is, where did you get this concept, or where did the concept of brand come from? You know, they used to brand African people during slavery. That's why they called it chattel slavery. Because your brand showed ownership. And they had no answer, because they don't understand the ramifications of many of the things that they do. All they see is, if there's $50 billion being spent, I need to get $50,000 at the deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Greece as an example, and let's go to Europe here for a second, we saw looking at the entire country of Greece being taken control of legally, which is what's happening here. Detroit is a mirror of Greece. Different processes, same rationale for what they're doing. You can call it privatization. You can call it global hostile corporate takeover. You can call it, what's the term that they use? In Greece, austerity. We were talking about austerity 6 years ago, before anybody was talking about austerity, trying to show people what was getting ready to happen.
Yeah.
And so when people looked up,
they find out that all of the natural resources within a particular a city, state, country are being privatized in this economic / political move whereby the corporations are taking over the functions of government. That's what's going on. Such that the danger is when your school systems, and don't leave out anything in terms of government functionality in the economic realm by way of privatization, what's going to happen and what is happening right now is your children in the school systems by way of privatization, whatever corporation controls that particular area of the school system will in fact own your children. If McDonald's has a system of 100 corporate schools where they train in the students to basically work for McDonald's, don't be surprised if one day your children comes home with the Golden Arches branded on them.
Mm-hmm.
You follow what I'm saying? Because that's what corporations do. They have brands. And that's what these allegedly well-educated, but really highly trained people do not understand. They understand the philosophy of finance, but they have no clue in terms of the political ramifications that go along with that philosophy. And in fact, are lining up to be at the head of the rope concession.
Yeah, I see this just like you said, Brother Robert. You know, years ago, you know, you were talking about austerity, educating us on that. And is there a way that we can, you know, sidestep the system? And I understand this taxation thing, how they got in the double taxation, but is there a way to sidestep this? Because I'm looking at this, you know, we have sometimes we have to take control of what they have established and use it for our own, this so-called farming piece that they're doing all over the place. If we can take a hold of this farming thing and use it for our own, and if we do have to tax it, you know, we tax it and have create a system where this taxes goes into our coffers to go even further, because the biggest thing that I think you guys said and ladies today was re-educating the people. You know,
Look at this, Brother Cal. Watch this.
Hold on. Let me say this real quick. Hold on a minute. I've been saying for a minute that we need to get involved in farming and agriculture. I got my 501c3, trying to go ahead and deal with the whole thing by getting in farming and agriculture. I've seen it a while back, what's going on. And we need to recognize that, hey, look, it's just too much money involved in that. And when individuals go ahead and say that you can't feed yourself and all this other stuff, that's a lie. There's a food shortage, all that. It's a bunch of malarkey. It's a big lie.
Right.
We need to go ahead, grab some of this dirt, and do for ourselves. It would take us out of this system, and go ahead and create a whole new different dynamic. Okay, so that farming and agriculture is big, and plus with that, with what's going on with them connecting from McCormick Place all the way to Gary, I sat through a couple of them Black Wall Street meetings, and there's some stuff I was hearing, and then some stuff I came across when they were on 35th, I think, King Drive, and they was kind of like hitting to it about then. And they were talking about, and part of the study was coming from the University of Illinois. And with that, there's going to be some of these vertical farms and indoor farms along the way.
Yeah. Right, right. They're actually going to take up inside the city, I know, from on 59th Street, from Wallace all the way to Damon. Two blocks south of that railroad track is going to be a walking track. It's going to be so-called green space. And two blocks north of it is going to be farms.
Hey, I'm telling you, I saw. Let me see. What is this? I think about three, maybe four years ago, I saw some of the planning. Some of the planners when they were going ahead. Some of these people from the University of Illinois, they were on this other committee, going ahead doing the planning for it. I'm like,
I got the planning because of the green issues that I've been following. But, you know, like I was saying, you know, what do you think about this plan of our own taxation within our communities, within our own people, and doing something with these taxes? Do you think this will work, Robert?
I think that what has to happen, and this is where I was going with this, who paid less taxes than anybody in the calendar year 2012?
Corporation.
Romney
is one of them. I'm not sure.
The major corporations in the country pay less taxes than anybody. You have to ask yourself, how
except
is that possible?
Except the churches who pay no taxes.
And you're talking about removing their non-taxable status, right?
Yeah. Right.
We're talking about 2012. The churches paid no taxes, so they paid less than
that
the corporation.
That is correct.
Right. They're talking about making them pay their water bill, so that they know that's the talk conversation.
Oh, they're coming at them.
They're going to pay something.
But here's the answer. And I've been screaming this, but you know sometimes it's hard for people to hear amidst all the noise.
Hello.
Hold on a minute.
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, we have
just a minute.
Hello.
A minute. Yeah, just a minute. Let me get back to you. Go ahead, Robert. Ask you.
We have to become corporate. I'm gonna say this again. If I have to scream it, I'm gonna scream it. We have to become corporate because that is the thing that you will be fighting. Not me, because I won't be here. But the people who are in their 30-somethings, you will have to corporatize the struggle to be able to fight properly, because it's going to take organization. It's not a new word. Kwame Ture, when I got a chance to speak to him before he made his transition, he said the problem, the major problem that's affecting black people is organization, organization, organization. I'm adding corporatizing the struggle, because that should be, by definition, based on what it is that we're fighting, the new mode of operation. We have to become corporate in our organizational paradigm. That's what's missing, such that you can hold people accountable, you can remove your leaders, you can dictate to them where you want them to go, and it's ancient in terms of its African application. You can call the corporate board the Council of Elders. This is where the construct came from. And so if we don't understand that, then we're going to be here 25 years from now. Again, I probably won't be here. But 25 years from now, they'll be on Blog Talk having the same discussion, because we refuse anything having to do with organization, because we've been a culture to follow personalities. And personalities within a corporate structure are functional or they are removed. We have to get beyond this worship of personality. That's what's holding us back.
Exactly. And that's why I say, Brother Rob, and I want to make this real clear. I understand what the other brother was saying as it relates to dealing in America, because I done said umpteen times today and in many previous shows, none of us on this line and those of us, I'm sure, who are listening, who have the conscious realm to understand global hegemony, we understand that we are here. We understand that we have to deal with the American currency. There's no way around that. But please understand, do not just focus on American currency. None of us on this line, I believe, would just focus on American currency. None of us on this line or those who are conscious. And so when you ask that question about what does the National Solidarity Committee seek to do in relationship to that, there again is your answer. Have work on the plan A in dealing with this, but always keep plan B through Z away outside of the realm of dependency on this currency. I don't know if I could stress it even further, but the more and more I keep hearing we need to just work on what we have here, the more and more I see one-sided minority way of thinking. I don't think on a minority level. I don't believe black people or African people in the diaspora, or however you want to, whatever name, more, whatever you want to call us, I don't view us as a minority. The way and the thought process that we believe, we view it as a majority. We are the majority population. We are the majority as it relates to resource, as it relates to minerals. We just have not consolidated that vision of majority. But again, whatever economic plan, whether it's from the brother, whether it's from Brother Robert X, whether it's from the sister, whether it's from those who sit at the table and deal with economics, at the end of the day, none of us are going to only sit back and depend on this particular currency of America. You might start off and begin, as the brother alluded to, you have to begin, because we don't have a currency, we have to begin with American currency and establish something, but that should never be our focal point. We should never sit back and tally up all of us to concentrate on that. Always have a cadre. Always have that platoon of a people who are also dealing with the movement away from dependency on the economic currency. We have to always have that. That's what we talk about, nation building. Anything relating to nation building has to always think outside of the box. And the box in this realm is the United States government and their Federal Reserve note and all that pertains to them. So I just want
to. And it's no accident, brother, that rich people don't even use currency.
Exactly.
Hold on a minute. Hey, 682-356, state your name, where you calling from?
Yeah, I'm Dolphin. Dolphin Norris. Part of
How you doing, Dolphin life. Norris? You got a question or comment?
I got a comment. First of all, I'd like to thank all you brothers for being on the line. Everybody brought in some very excellent and valid, very valid points. Robert, brother, always good to hear you as well. Thing Robert hit on the head that we have to take a close look at is that we, as the descendants of the diaspora, do have to form some type of corporate umbrella to flip the script. Now, here's the thing. We cannot depend on the American currency, as the brother just stated. However, it has to be a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of education is to control resources. And the first resource that we have to control is our minds, our emotions, and our body. And that's what Robert hits on a lot. Once we have control of our mind and our bodies and our emotions.
Hold on a minute. Hey, some people, I got background noise and some feedback. So, if you got your computer on, could you just turn that off if you're on the phone? And also, kind of limit the movement in the background, because we're trying to go ahead just basically have a conversation. Can we do that, please? Thank you. Okay, brother, continue.
We're talking about nation building. Nation building is only accomplished by owning and controlling land, labor, and capital. That's in any society, in any time of history of man. Now, what we are lacking is a strategy. Everybody knows the idea, what needs to be done. We all know the problem. We all know the solution. We just have to implement it. And the first thing starts in our minds. We have to, and this is what we've been hitting on, Robert, you know that with Life Builders, we are here to build families, to build communities. And the way to do that, and it's going to tie into what everybody said, we have to focus on a simple strategy of a four-legged stool of self-sufficiency. A four-legged stool of self-sufficiency. The first leg is to build where you live. That's the first leg. That gets the employment up, not looking for a job, but creating it. Two is grow what you eat. One of the brothers brought the point up. They are literally poisoning us with the foods that we eat, and if we claim back our own food, that changes the whole dynamic. That's why Whole Foods is coming to Inglewood. That's why Inglewood was labeled the agricultural center for Chicago now. It's been labeled that as the transportation hub and as the urban garden hub. And we're going to use that to our advantage. So that's the second leg. The third leg is to sow what we wear. And finally, the bottom line is to buy where we own. Now, I'll wrap that up by saying that the four-legged stool of self-sufficiency is to build where we live, grow what we eat, sow what we wear, and buy where we own. We change the game overnight without asking permission, and they'll come to us. We don't have to go to them.
Brother Dolph, thanks, I got a question for you. If I can, Brother Rob, can you can you explain to the people what's happening in terms of the initiative to institute the block farming system?
Yes, yes. The whole purpose of the block farming system is to go back to the old slave mentality. Our children who they are incarcerating at a rapid rate, 85% of those incarcerated in the state of Illinois come out of five communities. Those five communities are going to be targeted for these vacant lots to bring in these high towers, high tunnels. These children will have ankle bracelets, and they're going to be farming in the damn land in the inner city for the white folks that they're bringing in. And here's the lick. Chicago's population, I'm just using Chicago as an example because it's ground zero. Chicago's black population has dropped by over 400,000 over the last 10 years, and that's by design. Everywhere you go in the country, everyone, all blacks, are afraid all over the United States to come to Chicago. And at the same time, whites, Hispanics, and Asians are coming in by the droves. Asians are buying up major big plots, city blocks, in Chicago in the black community. We have to wake up. We're going to have to do some stuff that we ain't never done before to get to where we have. And we're going to have to just come out. Bowl on. You ain't building anything in my community that we ain't building.
That's right.
Whole Food is not building a store over there. It's another development is building the store over there. Whole Food is just going to be one of the tenants. Why Whole Food got to be the tenant? If we flip our dollars, that can be our store.
Exactly.
I get you. I'm with that. Like I said.
Stop letting people punk us. One of my favorite quotes was by Marcus Garvey. He said, "Man is equal to man. Only God is sovereign. Don't let the other guy bluff you or punk you." And that's what we're being done. They punking us because they got us. They got them building in our neighborhoods. They got us eating their food. They got us wearing their clothes. They got us buying what they own. We got to flip that script, and we can do it overnight by building where we live. Get the skills back. Grow what we eat. Get the skills back because the army moves on its belly. Sow what you wear, because what you wear, instead of wearing clothes that somebody else made to embarrass you, you're wearing clothing that honor your being. And the bottom line, what everybody else is doing that they got from us is buy only where they own. And we cannot do that. I'm a businessman. You cannot do that. It's too late in the game to try to do it as individuals. It has to be collective. It has to be a collaborative entrepreneurship.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Do you understand what I mean? You open up a store, and then you break to Chicago. We broke it up into seven villages, seven tribes. You get a grocery store and a fast food that's good food. You come with the money, open it up, then open up that tribe and let them come in and open and buy a piece of it, 80% of it. Then you turn around and sell the then you put the other 15% is owned by the other tribes or villages, so it's collaborative. And then the other 5% has to be the corporate structure, make it perpetual, on and on. You keep doing that over and over without permission, and it don't take no long time to do it.
That's right.
Thanks for that, brother. Let me get this other call in real quick. Don't go. Your line's open. Stay with us. 404-496. Your line is open. State your name. Where you calling from? You had your hand up, so I let you go ahead and chime in. I leave it open. You know, one thing about that, what the brother just said about going ahead and getting, dealing with that economic piece, like I'm big on that, and Chicago is one of them areas that's got vast amount of what they call the so-called food deserts. So, and I was looking at a whole bunch of these spots, and everything you were saying was on point. And my thing is this:
I keep saying this. I keep trying to go ahead and say that. How do you go combat the other nonsense that's out there to go ahead and put that in his head, put it in people's heads to go ahead and let people know that, hey, look, this is what we need to get into. But, and I think it's a lot easier. We all getting in the street and trying to do this. Farming and agriculture is a thing. You got to go ahead and get out there and let people know what's going on. But I go ahead and I'm willing to go ahead and show people that, hey, look, you know, we need to eat better. But go ahead and show you that, hey, look, because our people are ignorant to a lot of fruits and vegetables, period. You know, meats, they don't really know what to do with them. They overcook them. But I need to go ahead and make sure I iterate that I can show you how to get it from the ground and go ahead and make a vast amount of stuff. So I want to go ahead and see us put together these different stores, different grocery stores, but also just eating better, because it would eliminate a whole lot of times that we go ahead and go into their doctors, buying all their pills, all their drugs, and not realizing, hey, look, if you just eat better, you live better.
No doubt.
So, I mean, just it's real simple, and it's not rocket science, but, you know, we go ahead, and I want you to chime in on that. How do we go ahead and educate a little bit better on what we've been talking about, to go ahead and just eating better? Because it's just about surviving. And surviving, one of the things you need to do is pay attention to what you put in your body. We're not paying attention to what we put in our bodies. We're just going to go ahead and consume some garbage and think that that's it. We live in and just push on with it, not realizing the long-term implications with it. Y'all get me?
Yes, sir.
Well, definitely.
And I think on that particular level,
you have to go slowly with educating the people, because the one thing I found out, and this is what Brother Naquam, I got into with the Gravolia League and the Moringa. The brother has a farm out there in Africa, and he's distributing off of his farm in Africa here in America. And I got on board with the brother to help bring that to the people and educate the people as it relates to what these particular plants do in relationship to the negation of cancer and many other diseases that's out there that's been produced throughout our communities. And one of the things that I realized, not just in helping to produce, to helping to bring this into the communities as it relates to the moringa and the Gravolia leaves, for our people, but oftentimes, you know, and I'm pretty sure many of us on this line know this, oftentimes when we bring something to our people, the psychosis of the people is hard to accept the truth from their brother or from their sister, because, A, you're either not an Indian, you're not a Pakistani, or you're not white, or you don't have PhD behind your name or MD, so what do you know? What are you talking about? Yet, they'd be quick to go and buy Tylenol, but don't know what the ingredients of Tylenol is, and don't know the effects of Tylenol or Bayer or anything else for that matter. It's just become repetitious custom to do these things. And what I've done, I've gathered the researches, and there's a thing also with Brother Robert X, as he always stated, if people don't want to, Brother Robert X would always tell me, if people don't want to listen to what you got to say, pull out that research paper and let them see for themselves. And what I've done was, I've gathered research from Johns Hopkins Medical Center and many other Nebraska University and many other places that deal in medicine, what one would consider the top medical schools in this particular country. And also, Brother Naquam put together YouTube videos that dealt with the moringa, that dealt with the Gravolia leaves and what they do to cure cancers, to cure prostate cancers, to cure and lessen the effects to have a heart attack and many other particular diseases. And I noticed in showing the people, because a lot of our people don't read. However, a lot of our people are visual. And so I understand that in dealing with our people and getting information out to our people, it's not always about lecturing the people. It's not always about speaking to the people, but at the same time, it has to be a visual component or an oral component. You have to.
It has to be visual, on that type of level.
It has to be balanced, because if they're not hearing you orally, they could see what you're talking about. And so I think on that end, when it comes to that particular realm of how do you get the information out to the people, you have to be able to analyze the people, analyze who you're dealing with, analyze that individual that you're talking to, have the research in front of you, have the product in front of you, and show the effects of the product, show the outcome of the product. Show there's a sister that was using, for example, the sister that was using Grevolia leaves. She had the disease that Bernie Mac had. And this sister has that disease full blown. And in 3 weeks of her taking the moringa, her percentage rate was dropping, and it dropped down to 63% just in 3 weeks. It was killing the cancer within her to the point that it was gone. And so I think if we begin to show research, show the people, put together that type of formula, well, we're not just talking to the people, we're showing them as well the effects and giving them the samples of what we're talking about and having them gain access to us with such products. I think it goes a long way with the people, because in the beginning they're going to be skeptical because it's coming from their brother, it's coming from their sister. But once they feel the side effects, once they see, then it will slowly gather the people up to the realms of what you're talking about, and then we could push forward and helping to extend not only the products that the brother or the sister may have in Africa, but the products and the herbs that the brother and sister may have here in America, resounding with the truth of how we deal with our health and dealing with blood pressure, prostate cancer, and so forth all.
I'm curious to go ahead and know, because it just hit me. You know, they want to go ahead and change a lot of these areas in the farming, and I see that's what's about to occur in Detroit with all that open land up there. I mean, I got two sisters up there, and they send me pictures on how things just it's a whole lot worse than what it was a few years ago. And I'm curious to see what they intend to really do, what's going to be the primary crop, what they're going to do. And then you got these, the Monsanto wants to go ahead, and it already has a patent on seeds. And they had a patent on life. You know, what stuff are they going to grow? Is they going to go ahead and grow some stuff to go ahead and
hey,
make
man,
you like?
That ain't our business. You know what? Our business is not to be concerned that this motherfucker trying to kill us. Forgive my language, because we know that's the case. The question is, what are we going to do to prevent that and go forward? We need to focus on, like my man said, the moringa is the known food. It's a complete food.
When you get into farming and agriculture, okay, and even if you got it indoors, because whatever little bugs is go ahead crawling on it, those bugs seep out, and those bugs go ahead.
Listen, young man, my family, we own 4,000 acres in the state of Mississippi, and we use it to help feed black folks in the state of Mississippi. The bottom line is we focus on feeding ourselves. My brother stated, our food is our medicine. We have to change the psychic of our people to know that an apple or some fruit or vegetables is what prevents the diabetes, the high blood pressure. And like you said, many of them can't read. We got to have visual pictures showing them eating a donut with a big old hole in their chest. That's what they do in the white schools. Also, they show them eat fruits and vegetables. They show them how strong they are.
I'm also a chef, so I'm not naive to what's going on, okay?
So am I.
So stuff that pop up that I am curious. I'm still curious at what are they going to be growing in these farms. I also don't know one thing, but with tobacco, if you in the farming, when you go ahead, if tobacco, the people that's picking tobacco right now, some of that little water moisture on them is going ahead, they get skin pricks, and that's killing them. So you got to go ahead also, like I said, what are they going to be growing?
Yes, but the question is, what are we going to be growing? That's the most important thing, because if we grow on what we eat, they can grow anything they want. We ain't putting it in our system.
I think you missed my point. My whole thing is, hey, look, if they taking over these lands, I know we need to get our own stuff. I'm with that 2,000,000%. But right now, we got individuals who got things in place to go ahead and to create these farms. So what are they going to be putting out there? We still need to pay attention to what they're doing. We could go ahead and do it our stuff all day long. But still, black wealth is still 20 times less than white wealth. And with them having them kind of resources, they can outdo us on any given day. We must pay attention.
But
But at the same time, you have to realize that we as a nation, if you understood just blacks in America, their economic power, they won't even make you aware of that. Listen, if the blacks in America alone, just in the United States alone, if they were a nation, just a nation, which we're supposed to be, we would be 8 or 9 on the planet. We have the resources. We have the
blacks
resources.
In America could go ahead and outdo so many, because our numbers outdo so many other nations. I'm with that. I know that number. Okay,
so we can fully do that. So let's do this.
Right now, we have to go ahead and deal with right now and what's in place right now.
There's 20,000 acres of land in Pembroke.
It's because we got so many, we got a lot of black folks that wouldn't even listen to you right now. They go ahead and listen to you. Problem.
You're absolutely right.
They're not even aware of what's going on, and when you go ahead and explain it to them, they're like, okay, they will go ahead and rather pick up a remote and shut you off. Go ahead and change
the channel. You're absolutely right.
That's because the missing component in what both of you brothers are saying, Brother Dolphin, Brother Rob, the missing component is the people are not organized structurally to take advantage of anything, and as a result of that, anything takes advantage of them.
Let me add this, this is why I use
the corporation as an example. Let's take a hypothetical. We have a corporate structure in place. We want to issue share drafts, just like a credit union or any other major corporation.
Yes, sir.
We sell those shares to the people for a dollar or a penny, a nickel.
Yes.
You choose your form of currency. Now, what does that do? That automatically puts the people who own those shares in a position where when you bring the Marengo store to Chicago, to Detroit, and by the way, brother, tell your sister she needs to brush up on her Mandarin, because whatever the Chinese need to feed their people is going to be grown in Detroit, Ohio, and many other areas in the Midwest. That's what
they own Detroit. The Chinese 3 years ago bought up Detroit. The government just don't tell us. But they literally, physically, financially own Detroit.
But that's the component that's missing. If I own shares in the businesses that are opening, quite logically, I'm going to shop at those stores because it increases my dividend.
Okay, now when do we start creating corporations? Rob, listen, when do we create the corporation? That's not hard to do.
Yesterday. Hold on, one last point. When one of you mentioned the fact that our people are visual, you're absolutely right. So what needs to happen is the first monies that we get, the outline for the first businesses should already be in place, ready to open yesterday, so our people can see we don't just talk it, we walk it.
Right. Well, actually, you need to have the store. The few of us that are very fortunate to have capital, we just have to bite the bullet, whether we come up with $500 a piece or $5,000 a piece, and open up the first set of stores. Doing that,
that is correct.
Then you bring the people in and say, okay, come buy some of this. You buying some of this? You own it. Now, what we do, we take that same money. When we get it back, that same investment, those that know they put up the money have to say, I don't want this money back. This is my contribution to mankind, to our people. Then you take that money back and open up another one. Then you open
That's
up
right.
that village again, and then take that money again and open up another one. And just keep doing it over and over. And what you've done, you've rechanneled the resources back into our ourselves.
Exactly. And that's why the capital in the black community doesn't circulate a number of times the way it do in other people's communities, because those other peoples in their communities control the business in their communities, so the money is automatically going to circulate in those communities over and over, because that's where they live and that's where their businesses are. We can accomplish many of these things without the picketing and marching that the rope concessionaires, I'm going back to that rope concession, people consistently want to tie us to a system that's anti us. It's like feeding a child a neck bone. Try to give a baby something that's not good for his system. I don't care if it's Similac. He's going to throw it up because intuitively, automatically, his system knows to reject that which is not good for him.
You got
it's
that
only
right.
Through a process of acculturation that we begin to inculcate bad ideas, bad diets, bad systems that are bad for us because we haven't been taught at an early age about why it's so important to understand the dynamic of systems, which is what a corporation is, which is what our body is, which is what this country is, and everything else associated with it are systems.
And so is the United Nations. So back to my question to all of you guys, I pose to you, all of you. Hey, look, I put up the first five, first thousand, whatever we want to do. It can't be no one individual because then it's not a movement. It's got to be 10 of us, 50 of us, or whatever. I say, we're going to start right here, right now. Let's stop talking. Let's do.
I agree 100% because the brother in the poem, we've had that conversation, and it's
right.
It's the blessing of the supreme that you are even on this line, brother. As you related the fact of, I believe you said 20,000, your land mass.
No,
the brother
is that brother Calvin?
The land mass.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your number is 682, right?
Yeah, 682-365-0691. I'm out of Texas.
Right.
Okay. And that where your land is in Texas?
Yeah, I'm in Texas, but I'm here in Chicago until this damn movement get off the ground.
Okay, right. I'm gonna see you here real soon. I'll give you a call a little bit later. I'll give you a call after the show. Okay
well, please do.
Established because, as an example, and I'm gonna give you a perfect example. And again, I'm going back to this moringa and these gravolia leaves, or what's known as soursop leaves. I took that to people at my job. People who've never heard of it, people who really haven't gotten into anything herbal at all. They used to Tylenol, they used to bed, they used to soak in the bathtub, they used to soups, they used to all that, you know, to try to get the fever down, to try to stop the aches and the pains. I had a couple of people who had arthritis use the gravolia leaves and the moringa, and in 1 month's time did not feel the effects of their arthritis. Literally came up to them, wasn't no gimmick, wasn't no scam. They didn't have to come up to me and tell me anything. But they felt the effects of this plant or these plants that come from our homeland. Now, again,
and that brother is not lying. He is absolutely right.
Now, what's the benefit of that? Here's the benefit. It's not just helping them health-wise, but now you're helping them on a historical education because these herbs or these plants are from your homeland. This is growing on your land. This is coming from what our people use to cure ailments. And so now you can give that educational process that we always talk about because our people need the education. So now they're
That's
not
right.
just being educated on the health, they're being educated on the fact of where we come from as a people and how we cure ourselves. And this is why we've always taught our people that take that medication up off the shelf and your best performance of medication to heal you is going to be what you put in that cooking pot, not what you got on your shelf. And so... And this goes for all, quote-unquote, diseases. When we could take what that brother has in Texas and help expand on that land in Texas, take what Brother Naquam has coming out of Africa, distributing it here, tie these two brothers up and other brothers and sisters who are doing agricultural benefits for our people. Could you imagine that if we consolidated our efforts in agriculture and we changed our ways of eating, our diet. We got this information out, you know, and hell, I'd be out on the forefront and with bags giving this stuff to our people. Imagine if we educated the people to that process, starting with just diet. Because, again, we all know we have to first get to our people's mind. But, again, as we know the old cliche, you are what you eat. So I can't even get to my brother or sister's mind until I first change his eating habits. For him to accept what the hell I'm trying to talk to him about or talk to her about. And so,
well, you know, brother,
if we expand on that, help expand that brother's land in Texas, help expand Brother Naquam's piece as it relates to the moringa, as it relates to the gravolia leaves, and then others who have natural herbs, bring that to the forefront to create our own Department of Agriculture, then there would be no necessity to go and buy particular things from Food for Less or Dominix or Jewels. We have our own farmlands within the communities and have people, like I said earlier, have Miss Smith grow lettuce, have Mrs. Robinson grow some peppers, have so-and-so grow, you know, tomatoes. We begin that process. We have our own fruits, our own vegetables, our own natural herbs. We begin to cure ourselves.
Well, I'll add this real quickly. One of the other components to this whole corporate thing is the socialization process. Mm-hmm. And I think that in many cases, with all the killing and the shootings and stuff going on, we need to have the capacity to move our people from one venue to another. Okay? If brothers here are being harassed by PD, we need to take them down to Dolphin's place to move them out of this environment, because the environment is toxic. And we need to understand the nature, environmental toxicity, if you will, because it's a killer. Before you even eat the bad food, you're already vibrating at a very low level, making you susceptible to the disease. So we need to be able to move people around. I don't care if it's in having bunk houses, if you will, like they used to have back in the day, where we need to take 25, 30 brothers from Chicago and send them down to the farm for 6 months, or send them to another city where we control land masses there for 6 months or whatever, or we need to take African people in this country and set up systems where we, in fact, send them to various African countries to learn and do that vice versa by bringing African people here. These are all things that are attainable. I'm going to say it again. The most important component to all of this is organization, organization, organization. That's what's missing.
Exactly.
We're not organized to do any of it. They're all conceptual because we haven't been organized. And that's how they control us.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Hey,
give me a minute. It's time for my my time. I always got to play that great motivational speaker. I know. The one who keeps me good doing this and keeps me going every day. Y'all pay attention here. This is a lesson for every damn body here.
No, I've often said that thank God for slavery because, you know, had not, then the blacks who were here would have been stuck in Africa. And you see how bad Africa, everybody and mama trying to get out of Africa and come to America. Mm-hmm. And so God has a way of looking out for folks, and he made it possible by way of slavery to get black folks into this country. But 100% American. Proud of it. I thank God that he saw fit for me to get here. Never mind that, you know, we were sold. I mean, my ancestors way back, way young, the wind, were sold by Arabs and blacks to white folks and got us here. The white man came and brought us to the greatest country in the world. The ride over was pretty tough. But, you know, it's like riding on a crowded airplane and when you're not in first class. It's a tough ride. But you're happy when you get to your destination. And so the ride was tough over here. The pain for freedom was tough, you know, because in life, if you want to gain something, you got to lose something. No pain, no gain. So it was a tough. The pain was tough, all for the sake of freedom. So I thank God that he got me here, and to show my appreciation to the blacks who suffered as a result of coming here, and the Arabs and blacks who sold us to the white man, the white man for for going there and getting us and bringing us here. I want to say thanks.
Yep, yep. This is welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob. That was your what the fuck moment. You can get it all out. You know, I ain't got no shame. You know, I'm like, what the fuck? When I first heard that, man, I still laugh every time I hear that, man.
Pure motivation.
Yeah,
that's one of them rope concessionaires, brother.
Right.
Yeah. Hold on. I think I got another caller. 780.
Yes, I'm here. I'm just listening, and I'm in the real world. I feel solely dependent on the government. I get food stamps. I'm on Medicaid. This completely my job. I work with the school system. That's the government. So I'm just, I feel like I want to get released from it, and that's the plantation. And talking about slavery, I'm definitely a slave.
Okay. Thank you, sister. Anybody want to comment to that?
All I can say is welcome to the world of the free slaves, because that's what we are. I'm going to quote Carter Woodson. If you don't understand that you're a free slave, laid out the narrative. He said you've been educated extremely well, but you don't own nothing in your community. You got 7 degrees in 7 different disciplines, but you're extremely undisciplined. He said, to show you that you're a free slave and still live within the confines of the plantation, even though the mode has changed, it's still the same. He says, the plantation now is if you go outside of your confines, you will be stopped and frisked. If they ain't no, if you, when you go to the master's house, you automatically go to the back door. That exists today. And if it ain't one there, what will you do?
Create one.
You will make one. That is the definition given by a very prominent Boule, very well-educated black man, Carter G. Woodson, the father of black history, where every February, slavery is reinforced by giving us a history that only starts in 1865 and nothing before that. Like we fell out the sky in 1865 and became something different than what we've always been, and that's an African people.
And
welcome to the world of free slavery, Queen.
And welcome. It's only 2% of those are really free, because only 2% of African descendants own their own businesses, and they're struggling to keep their freedom because others are spending their resources with the other people. That's got to be the real wake-up call. Sister, if we want to free our brothers, we have to spend our economics, the little bit that we have, with ourselves. A Mexican will spend a dime with you. Asian will
right.
not spend a dime with you. A white boy will spend a dollar with you. $3 return.
Okay,
hold
on a minute. We got 2 minutes left here. We're going to go ahead and go in overtime so we can continue this conversation. Is everybody up to it?
I got a few extra minutes.
Okay. Yeah, we got about 2 minutes. The call-in number is 347-215-8465. Back to that brother who got that farmland. I'm still curious about some things with you, man. My thing is, you didn't make what farmland you got, brother? Calvin?
No, that's Dolphin.
That's 4,000 acres. It's my family's land. About 4 or 5 of us cut up. It's in the state of Mississippi, and Mississippi got the richest soil in the United States.
Yep.
How far is it closer to the Mississippi River?
No, it's not. It's in Starksville. It's a little bit. It's in the Triangle area. Starksville, Mississippi, West Point, and Tupelo.
Okay.
all of it right together. It's like three, like a triangle area. Just look up Mississippi State, and that's the area, Mississippi State University. And matter of fact, Mississippi State University is the number one agricultural school on the planet. They're sending people from all over the world there just how to farm.
Yeah, I saw that. That was one of the first things I saw when I was thinking, hey, look, what area in the U.S. is where I would rather go to? And when I was looking at that. And then I came across, like I said, I got the 501c3 deal with farming and agriculture. So one of the things that I also saw was the amount of fish farming along the Mississippi. And then the amount of fertile land going toward Jackson State.
Right. That's exactly right. But one thing the brother brought up, I know we're out of time. It's another good point. But that area is a good place to, like Rob said, we need to be able to take 30 and 20 brothers out of the different 10 or 20 different markets, bring them down there so they can all collaborate together from all over the country. They work together for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is. So when they leave back out, coming back into their respective places, they got a collaborative team already in place.
I'm going to give you a call because I'm going to explain a little bit more about my plan. But we're going to be here for a minute because, hey, look, still some more things need to be said. Brother Fakan.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. You got the floor. You go ahead and tell a little bit more about that National Solidarity Committee because I love hearing that information.
Most definitely. Well, you know, we came up with that particular idea, the National Solidarity Committee, because we viewed looking at the United States of America and them having their United Nations, our African brothers and sisters creating what was considered the OAU at the time and then literally went down to the AU, the African Union. We said it's about that time for African people here within this country to create an umbrella. We don't have to negate anybody's organizations. We don't have to waste our time talking about religion and whose religion is what, as Brother El Haj Malik Shabazz, peace be upon him, said, you know, we'll be dealing with the question of religion all day long. Keep it in the closet. That's your personal business. We have to get in tune to what's going to set us free as a people. And also we recognize that everybody's not going to join one particular organization. If that's the case, we all will be in the UNIA or we all be members of the Nation of Islam or we all be members of the Black Panther Party, whatever have you, this organization that's out here. However, that's not the case. As much as we may disagree with some aspects within these organizations, we all do agree to some aspects of these organizations. And so the National Solidarity Committee said, why don't we take what we agree with these different organizations and use the components of agreement and solidify ourselves to build our own constitution, our own policies and mandates, and begin the process to put together ways that we could begin to govern ourselves as a people within the realms of this particular country called the United States of America. So, for example, I always say, like, let's take the Nation of Islam, for example. People may not agree to the religious aspect or religious component of the Nation of Islam, but the one thing we do agree with the Nation of Islam, people may say, and when they see them, man, those are some disciplined sisters, those are some disciplined brothers, they disciplined. We all agree to that aspect. You may not agree to the Morris Science Temple of America and their particular religious outfit, but however, we all will agree that, man, they in tune with their law. They know the law. They know how to deal with the court. They know how to deal with that. Or any other organization that have different benefits and values within the realms of their particular program, again, we may not agree with everything, but there are aspects that we do agree with. So we say, what's stopping us from learning the agreement, what we agree with from these organizations and putting it in a realm to benefit us as a people and creating that umbrella so by way of which we could create our own Department of Public Affairs. We create our own Department of International Affairs. Somebody got background in the back. I feel like I'm
on the playground.
So I'm saying, with all of that, we negate what's negative or what we would consider as negative within the realms of each of us. The Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey said, when you talk to the black man, when you talk with your brother, talk to your brother as if you're talking to the nation. So we talk to each other as the nation talking to each other, not as Brother Fakan talking to Brother Rob or Brother Fakan talking to Brother Robert X or Brother Fakan talking to Brother Dolphin, but we talking as representatives of the nation to each other. And when we talk as representatives of the nation to each other, we talking on a broader level of visual acceptance with each other. What is more valuable and benefit from us and what we may represent organizationally for the masses of the people? And then at the same time, establishing that umbrella, what's called the National Solidarity Committee. And so when we put this piece together, we brought about the charter. The charter was the first thing established, and we unified ourselves at the then African Union's charter. At that time, the president was our dear brother, who's transcended, Brother Muammar Gaddafi. We took that particular charter, and we reevaluated the charter and tweaked it a little bit to fit the brothers and sisters here within the realms of America, but also to show our alliance with African sovereignty, with African promotion of self-reliance, with African promotion of scientific analysis and development of us as a people for self-determination, for freedom, for liberation. And we said from there, if we can gain the components, those brothers who deal with agriculture, those brothers who deal with economics, those brothers who deal from a historical perspective of education, and the many realms, those brothers who know the law, because we need our own Department of Justice. We need our own Department of Agriculture, because we're dealing with a global system that has their particular departments, that has their particular agencies. And so I believe it was our brother Frederick Douglass who said power concedes nothing without a demand. And so our demands, we don't have demands at this stage where we at. We have questions. We have complaints. We don't have demand because we don't have organization. We don't have demand because we don't have a structure, a component that truly represents us as a people. When we have visitors come here from Chicago, whether it's a Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson, whether it's a Professor Griff, whether it's Brother Polite, whether it's Sarah Sutton Seti, whoever comes to Chicago, there should be a contingency of brothers and sisters greeting them at the airport and welcoming them into the city, and vice versa. Representatives from each major city, there should be a contingency of brothers and sisters who welcome those brothers and sisters coming into the other cities, recognizing that we are for the benefit of a nation, and we represent each other. We have built communications. We have built, we have language that we communicate with each other in understanding this particular struggle. For example, I sat down with Mustafa Farrakhan. Mustafa Farrakhan, who is the supreme captain over the Nation of Islam. He's over the entire fruit of Islam. He's also Minister Louis Farrakhan's son. And as I explained to the brother, what's stopping the Nation of Islam, the New Black Panther Party, and many other components who have numbers, who have hundreds of brothers and sisters within their ranks, known for their security? What's stopping these brothers from consolidating together to produce our own defensive apparatus, to police our own communities, to see our own brothers walking up and down the street and having and showing the brothers in the community that we are here? Because as experience has shown, even here in Chicago, when we were walking the streets in just fatigues, with black berets on, black fatigues, brothers on the corner who was hard and rough see you coming, and they'll stop what they're doing. Oh, man, how you doing? What's going on, brothers? Well, man, what y'all about? Man, y'all looking cold coming. It stopped them from doing what they were doing, and they had questions about who you were. And from that, you were already gaining the acceptance of who you were to protect the communities. We did that in the Robert Taylor Homes and Ida B. Wells and all of the projects for Greeny Greens, and the brothers who were on their business, we never attacked them on what they were doing. Our first goal was to have them accept us for what we was representing for the value and benefit of them. And so, again, this is what the National Solidarity Committee is about, is to say we must formalize our umbrella. I believe it was Brother Calvin or Brother Dolphin, and certainly